For October the 9th, 2015, we talk about The Beginner's Guide, The Humble Monthly Deal, and we ask you what you listen to when you play games. Oh, we hope it's us. Welcome to the 123rd level. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meissman.
I'm Jella Prendez.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Yes, 1, 2, 3.
Three people love video games?
No, it's episode 123. I suppose I should have given some context. See, people who are listening would have heard me slate to the beginning of the episode with "Welcome to the 123rd level," but you guys didn't, so I didn't give you any context for the thing I said.
So, ironically enough, we know less about the podcast than the viewers.
Yeah, yes.
Especially, I'm not surprised by this.
Especially the viewers who found the secret video stream.
Mm-hmm. Dum dum dum.
Wow. Yeah. So, anybody have any anecdotes from the past week or so?
That Adam Warlock concert I went to was really awesome.
Which concert? I'm sorry.
Adam Warlock.
Yep.
He is a nerdcore rapper. He does rap about games, comics, and other nerdy things like movie series, etc., like Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, Bastion, Saga, you know, whatever, all different kinds of stuff. Mostly comics, but also a bunch of other things too. And he was performing at 8th Dimension Comics and Games, which is a local store and event center that has been the number one, you know, comic store in Houston for 3 years running via, you know, like a Houston Press poll. So, and it's run by a couple of friends of mine, so it's pretty cool. Hmm. Yeah.
That's cool. Like a rap show in a comic shop. Do they have like a stage or anything, or is he like down on the floor?
They actually have like a whole separate event center section of the space. Like in their space, they built that as a separate, you know, area for these types of events, ladies' nights, big games that they run, and things like that. So, but
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but I definitely recommend Adam Warlock's music, though, to anybody who doesn't already know who he is. He drops it out on the internet for free and basically runs off donations. The amusing fact is that he used to be a lawyer, and he quit that job to be a musician full-time about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So
good for him.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, also, he gave me a t-shirt for free. That was nice.
Neat. Well, yeah, I'll take that under advisement. I'm happy you had a good time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the first time I've heard of the concept of a comic book store / music venue, but that sounds really awesome.
They also have had, like, the Double Clicks show up, and
Wheaton?
Yes, that guy. Sorry, I've just, my mind blanked on the last name, and people are probably like, oh, Jala!
But no, like, I kind of like the idea of Will Ogg.
I see, like Steve Ogg, the guy who, the actor who played Trevor in Grand Theft Auto? What are you, what?
No, they have a lot of events going on kind of consistently, and they really do have a welcoming space for all people of all walks of life. So, you know, they are friendly to anybody and everybody. And they're pretty awesome. So I say pretty awesome. They're really awesome. They also stock my comic, so they're really cool.
You're partial to them.
Yeah, I might be partial, but it's okay. Nice. They're not the only people who stock my comic, but they just happen to be the coolest. So
free plugs. Yeah.
Right.
Cool. Well, I want to get into the show, actually, because I'm excited about some stuff that we have coming up here. So we've got the usual happening. We've got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and we're going to get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. I'm going to go for, this is the second week in a row that I've done it, but I'm going to take charge. Damn it.
Do the thing, Cole. Do the thing.
I will do the thing.
Alpha Cole.
Yeah. Oh gosh, that is so far from the truth. Let's see here. No. I am a fan of Humble. I think they do some cool stuff, although their mainline bundles, especially the most recent one, not been too terribly impressed with them as of late, but their sales are good and their store is good. They just announced something new that I think we all talked about a little bit back when we covered Humble on the show more frequently. So they announced over the past week that starting in November, you can give them $12 a month for basically just a loot crate of games. Except a digital loot crate of games and not full of terrible memeware. So the idea is $12 a month as opposed to buying a whole bunch of bundles, and they're gonna say like, hey, here is our premium selection. As good faith money, they gave people who signed up early, the service starts in November, they gave people who signed up early a copy of Legend of Grimrock 2.
Ooh, I actually want that game. It's on my wish list.
Yeah, it's normally $24, but you can get it for $12 here and then get a bunch of free games come November. So I want to hear what you guys think about this, because we all have varying levels of, I think, commitment to the Humble ecosystem, if backlog. That makes any sense. Yeah, is the source of most of my backlog. However,
the Humble backlog bundle.
Exactly. Yeah, where they take games away from you.
Please do. I have too many. I don't even know what half of them are. Anyway.
I really need to like go through and then just be like, okay, this is a game that I got in a bundle. I'm going to put that into a Steam category that I never have to see again. Jala, like, would you use this?
Potentially. I'm going to have to look into more information on it. But because I kind of so frequently pick up Humble Bundles and or random games just because they're cheap and look quasi, you know, amusing on Steam, I am more likely to get that than I think a good chunk of the other people on the show. So,
yeah, I don't know. Like, I look at it. So on one hand, it's just another eel to attach to yourself that'll suck your blood little by little. But that falls below my amount of money that I would notice. So
pro tip, that's not how eels work. It's a
I know that's more of a remora, but it's better to say that eels attach to you. That's not even my thing.
I think lamprey.
It's not even my thing. It's a John Roderick thing. I don't know, like, I like PSN or PS Plus or whatever, and this is, it seems like a more favorable version of that, where you don't have to be like on top of it. And I don't know, like, unless they start just giving me a whole bunch of like, oh, here is Gish again, what the fuck, Braid. unless it ends up being stuff like that over and over again, in which case I'll be like, oh, well, that's kind of lame.
Yeah, you do realize how much animu you're going to end up with,
which is fine. I mean, I don't normally see like a bunch of anime on the on their bundles and stuff.
Really? It seems like I know.
And they had that one that was like the Humble anime bundle or whatever it was.
I mean more like it seems like that's kind of one of the rising tides in indie games. It's like the quirky anime games.
Yeah,
I think games. That has always been there and that will always be there somewhere. But I don't necessarily think that it's like, you know, suddenly Humble is just going to spam you with, you know, Honey Pop or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I kind of like the image of that just filling up Cole's account.
And I'm just going to paste in that gif of Ron Swanson throwing away his computer. And we're good. I don't know. Does anybody else have any opinions on this? Like go ahead.
I have a question. Can you control where your money gets donated to for the monthly payment? Like you can when you buy it?
I actually have no idea.
Okay.
Well, I know that you can on pretty much anything else you buy from there, so I would imagine that that would be like a scale that you can log in and switch around, at least if it works like anything else on their store.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, that is actually a very good question. I want to make sure that I have a little bit of control over that. They would have, I see no reason for them not to.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I assume also, I wonder how they'd hook up with like selection of charities, stuff like that.
Yeah. They're like, they've got like a really big, like even when you go and buy something from their store, you can select which one they go through, and like, they have a very wide array of causes you can throw to, from like the EFF to the WWF. So
that's cool. Cause I mean, there's a couple of charities I don't want to support. Mm-hmm. And yeah, although overall everything I've seen, like mainline, you know, their drives have always been solid groups.
Yeah.
I think for me, like, I feel like the normal bundle, where the actual bundles here, it seems like they're always really good quality. So I feel like I wouldn't be at all worried about like quality for my money of this. Although I think for me personally, I tend not to be as into a lot of the stuff that tends to be real popular in indie games. So. Mm-hmm. I think for me, I'd probably pass it simply because the type of games that, you know, the puzzle and, you know, platformers and stuff like that, that tend to make up the bundles, just don't really interest me.
Yeah.
Well, I just looked up on their website, and it just says that 5% of the proceeds for each of the monthly bundles goes to charity, but I would have to log in and fiddle with it to see if you can adjust it if you subscribe, but I may just post about that as a follow-up later, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's also possible, because this is in pre-release, that they haven't made a decision about that yet, or they haven't implemented it. Like, it's squarely in pre-purchase kind of stuff.
Sure. Did you see the now up to like a humble monthly bundle or something like that?
What?
Yeah, like wasn't that like a couple weeks ago they started releasing like maybe that's this actually. I'm sorry.
It is this.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Exactly.
I was assuming that was a like monthly buying thing. Okay.
No.
See, I was kind of hoping like I'd kind of like to see them continue that theme, so like have the humble yearly bundle and like the humble decade bundle.
Yeah, well, they've had the weekly bundle for a good long while. Like that's been a thing, and they have really good turnover in terms of like what they offer each week, from like entire franchises to like different publishers and stuff like that. So there's like, I don't want to continue too much on this, but like it should probably be like at least addressed that there's a narrative out there about Humble that they're in trouble. That like they accepted a bunch of money. I don't know the details on this, but like that actually does line up with this, because a little bit of dependable income is better than unpredictable income, if that makes any sense.
So just in terms of, because people can, you know, divvy up the money however they want, that might probably like for them. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, a little bit. Or just, putting stuff up there for people to grab a la carte. You're never sure to get the dependable income from them. Not even in the sense of letting people decide how much they want to split.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll definitely see once the first game comes out, but I think it's a real interesting move.
Yeah.
David, how about you? What's your story?
Sure. Ubisoft has announced the next Far Cry game.
Mm-hmm.
Is going to be Far Cry Primal, and it will be set in the caveman era.
is this a joke?
No, this is actually a thing.
Awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I really find myself oscillating on this.
Okay, give me the positive. Like, what looks cool about this?
Sure. Well, a couple of cool things. You know, it's real, real early in terms of like them announcing it. And so it kind of looks like a lot of the, you know, a lot of the information is sort of, you know, what can we glean from what they've said as opposed to, you know, bullet pointed feature lists.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like there's maybe going to be a mechanic where, like, you're the head of your caveman tribe and you have to kind of make decisions for them and lead them and, you know, protect the tribe and stuff like that.
Hmm.
So that seems kind of cool. And, you know, it's hard to say the other things. I mean, that's really the only thing I've seen that I would say is overtly like a feature-y thing.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would say just kind of think about it, you know, it seems like there's a lot of opportunity for, you know, really playing up the kind of versus animals elements.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like a lot of opportunities to kill animals and take their outsides.
Exactly, exactly. Although apparently they've said you can make weapons out of bones, so I guess this time you're killing animals and taking their insides.
Taking all of them.
Yeah, unless they're like spiders or bugs who have exoskeletons, in which case you're still taking their outsides.
To be fair, a lot of the animations you're taking the insides, even if you end up with their outsides.
Yeah, yeah, you're not real good at anatomy in that game.
Killing animals and taking their everythings.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, my people, you know, use every part of the video game animal.
use every part of you. Yeah. Huh.
I think the on the other hand, it looks like maybe they're going to be doing some things with kind of like warfare with other tribes.
Hmm.
Which I think could be interesting, especially if they pull in like some of the you know, recent research that's kind of been bubbling out that says, you know, there's a good chance that Homo sapiens basically wiped out all the other species.
What's this say here about enhanced Jeep physics? That's weird.
Common misconception. Jeep was actually a prehistoric animal.
The Jeeps that we see are just the exoskeletons that we've managed to dig up.
They're the remains.
Yeah. Yep.
That seems entirely legitimate. Mm-hmm. I believe that. Yeah. I think the other thing is like woolly mammoth hunt is very, very high up there on like my personal like dream things I would like to do.
Wait a minute, wasn't that the premise of what's his name who did The Invisible Man? Any Shewell story where like where there were like rich people who paid to go back in time to hunt mammoths, and that that caused all kinds of like crazy out of control timeline effects.
That sounds legit. Although I'd say that'd more be like a much more realistic take on how Jurassic Park would play out.
They're not playing with time.
No, I meant whole like making a theme park seems like the least likely thing you'd do with technology.
Yeah, you definitely have to kill them.
Yeah, it's kind of what humanity does, you know.
That seems like an awesome idea for a Jurassic Park sequel. It was all a time machine.
The hunter remains the hunted.
Yeah. Huh. So, the one thing I'll be interested to see is how solidly they you know, stay attached to history, by which I mean, are they able to resist including dinosaurs?
Hmm. I think that there's probably going to be some megafauna that is dinosaur-esque.
Yeah.
Yeah. In some ways, I kind of feel like that would be too bad, simply because it's like there's been lots and lots of dinosaur games, whereas actually, like, kind of the I don't know, kind of the prehistory, like actual caveman era is a much less explored, you know, setting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know that humankind and dinosaurs did not coexist, despite what the Simpsons and the Creation Museum down in Erlanger has tried to tell me. But that is fun, and I would much rather have fun than real.
Sure.
Also, the short story I'm thinking of is A Sound of Thunder, and it was by Ray Bradbury, just in case anybody was going to write in with that.
Yeah.
Huh. I'm excited by the fact that it looks like, at least according to this hero image at the top of the article, you will have a saber-toothed tiger friend.
Yeah, you know, that seems seems plausible, maybe, because, you know, cats are so predictable and, you know, loving
loyal.
In real life, making them big enough to kill you couldn't possibly go wrong.
They're so concerned with how you're doing as well.
Yeah.
So, I wonder how they're going to work in a hang glider, though.
Bone glider.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, like, I'm interested to see what they do with, like, weapon variety, because, like, grand like bow and arrow is the cool new weapon.
Oh, that's so 2013.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Not to blow up your spot, but
I know. I it'd be interesting to see if they like pulled in some of the like less used. Yeah, weapons, you know, some of the spear throwing and stuff like that. There's lots of cool things.
I could see that. I'd do like a charge kind of thing.
Yeah.
Basically, I just described a bow and arrow. Jala, what's your story here?
My story is about a PC game being developed by Robot Loves Kitty that is called Upsilon Circuit. It is part action RPG, part live stream game show, and permadeath, according to the dev's website. This is a game that has no respawns. Once you die, you can never play again. The setup is similar to the Hunger Games, where it's limited to 8 players in the game at one time. There's only one server. They're split into 2 teams of 4. Spectators watch via Twitch and can either help or troll certain players by buying items to, you know, help or hinder them. They can get monsters, they can purchase monsters using either the coins that they accrue by watching or by spending real money. So they're kind of monetizing trolling in that way. However, the audience also gains XP from the players' kills, so it also benefits the audience to keep players alive. It's just that if they don't like a particular person, they can, you know, try to get them, you know, off the mat, if you will. Once a player dies, a spectator is chosen at random to replace them, but during a video interview by PC Gamer during PAX, creator Calvin Goebel said that there will be a more selective process among the spectators who are actually participating and are interested in the game, because they're more likely to offer more interesting play when it's their turn to get in.
Yeah.
He says that the one server will only be up for 2 or 3 hours a day, much as if you were watching a game show or something like that. But this game is definitely, just from looking at the interview that PC Gamer did with, you know, the dev, they're not so interested in the monetizing of it so much as they are just seeing what's going to happen and, you know, how... the audience and the players and, you know, gamers as a whole take it, you know, what they do with it from here. So, So yeah, it's kind of like, this is kind of like a game that is, again, along the same vein as some of the completely random stuff I talk about, you know, which is having to do with social stuff and esports and, you know, the gaming culture as a whole. And if this does become a thing where, you know, there are more games created like this, which are temporary and are run kind of like a TV show for a finite amount of time, then, you know, like we may see a completely different side of gaming that is more active viewing, not just, you know, via a Twitch stream, but as something more than that, where you may be watching this Twitch stream and suddenly be tapped in and then you've got to play. So
I mean, it sounds like did anybody here ever play the Xbox Live game 1 versus 100?
No.
No.
it was kind of a similar idea. It was adapted from a Bob Saget television show.
Yeah.
Recipe for Success. It was a quiz show kind of thing where there is one person who's on the hot seat to answer trivia questions, and then a panel of 100 people who are also answering alongside that, and how well the 100 did would affect kind of what the payout was. And if you were in the 100, you could be called up next. But this was a nightly event with an actual announcer and prize money and stuff like that. And so I played it a couple times, A, because I love trivia, but B, who knows if you're going to be called up.
And you love Bob Saget.
Well, yeah, of course. Bob Saget had nothing to do with it. at least the video game version. But, it has his legacy. It's part of his legacy. That filthy, filthy man.
Yeah, I feel like kind of my gut read on this is that, the developer that, thinks this is going to, work out to be anything, apparently doesn't know what 4chan is.
I mean, as long as people can't put content in.
I just see this just being kind of pointless trolling that, destroys the signal to noise ratio.
Hmm. I mean, just in terms of it kind of seems like there would be a ceiling on how much you could actually throw enemies at, it seems like you're just kind of buying the ability to make the level more difficult.
Well, you're also able, like I said, to gain experience per what's going on in the game. So even if you're just watching, if the dudes in the game are leveling up, then you're leveling up, and you can, via the GUI, you can go ahead and set up your avatar just in case you get tapped in and things like that. So, I mean, you are somewhat invested in making sure that some of these characters survive anyway. But you are basically being turned loose to go, pick on somebody else who's in the game for sure. So I'm not necessarily saying that, this is the coolest thing ever. It's an interesting and weird thing that is going on that I'm kind of curious to see what happens next. But
I guess that's kind of what I'm saying though, is I feel like any sort of, anything that suggests that people on the internet will behave in rational and constructive manners seems like it comes from not knowing much about the internet.
Well, that, as Jella said, I think that's good that they tied it so that your experience is tied to their experience, because then at least not everybody can be against the player,
Yeah.
I feel like that's based on an assumption that, people are going to care as opposed to just wanting to burn things to the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and, at least hope that they recognize that, the wolves are going to be at the gates, and hopefully they're going to find a way to harness that for entertainment.
Sure. Doing, they had mentioned in the article that they've been doing small batch testing, but they're going to be, before they even try to release it, they're going to be doing some larger, large group testing and things like that to see how larger and larger groups handle the game before they even turn it out to, the full, public. Yeah. So.
Hmm.
I like the idea of doing special events like that, though, too, where the game's only active for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly probably will pop in and take a look at it once it goes live. I don't know that I'm going to be an avid watcher. I'm going to be sitting there for 2 or 3 hours a day every day watching it religiously. But, I definitely will be hey, I wonder what's going on in, Upsilon. Let me go take a look.
Yeah.
Kind
of seems like if that's not something you do habitually already, it's going to take more than one game to make that happen.
Yeah.
Huh. We'll have to keep an eye on it.
Yep.
Let's see here. Ben, round us out with your story.
Okay. I have another one of a game coming out in the future. It's called Arizona Sunshine, which sounds nice and happy. They're making it for the HTC Vive, but it's a zombie sort of game. Think of it as a first-person Left 4 Dead, which Left 4 Dead's already first person. So think of it attached to the Oculus. Some of the cool features of it is you create virtual sidearms and regular arms, forearms, for like what guns you're carrying. And you have like virtual clips and ammo that you have to reload. And so the idea is you're trying to get from one point of map to another one, which is sounds boring, like a fetch quest or whatever. Mm-hmm. But basically the mechanics of the game are trying to manage your ammo inventory, shooting zombies that you might come across, and just making it to a destination. Huh. So it sounds like a pretty interesting demo for the Oculus to see if that has potential for, you know, making a new type of game experience.
Is it Oculus or is it the Vive?
It's the Vive. What's the difference?
I think the Vive is Valve's crazy one that turns. It's like an installation. Okay. Like it actually mm-hmm. turns your room into whatever it is you are you're experiencing. Granted, I don't know the specifics of it. Yes, yeah, it's more like a Zathura. Wait, which one is the follow up to Jumanji and which one is the song? Also Sprock.
Fake Zathura.
Yep. Yes. But yeah. So I'm wondering.
Got that stuck in my head.
Cool. It's a 17 minute long song. So just play the entire thing in your head, and then it'll be over with. That's the trick to that. But yeah, I'm wondering if it is the Vive. I'm not sure what the co-op capabilities are on that system. So I'd be curious if they're trying to get that Left 4 Dead heat, if they're actually going to be able to accomplish it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have like a whole row of rooms, like the like those Daytona cockpits at a GameWorks, I'm sure that would incite a lot of panic.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems cool. I kind of like the idea of it sounds like maybe including some more realistic weapon handling. I could see that being cool. I don't know how they're actually going to do it. Yeah, I could see like doing like ground clearing and stuff like that could be interesting.
Yeah.
And you kind of have one-to-one aiming now, so that's kind of cool.
Hmm. You don't have that with a mouse?
Well, it's just not the same, you know.
I suppose. Yeah. I suppose.
See, I wonder how they do that though.
You see like photos of people who are holding like the weird little like tracker things that are they're holding them like their guns.
Like they have like pistol grips and stuff.
Yeah, a little bit. They're like weird controllers that are meant to be tracked by the system.
Oh, yeah, that could maybe work.
Yeah. Neat. Well, a bunch of exciting stuff. Like, guys, we're coming up on the end of the year. This is mm-hmm. crazy. And it's all going to start up again soon.
Mm. Yes, that is in fact how years work.
You already got your goatee locked in, Cole.
Maybe Fallout is still on the horizon.
Oh, yeah.
I said goatee so far.
See, I thought the goatee was just going to be a goat simulator.
No, goatee is the name of the award the for games that are most like Goat Simulator.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer. This is the listener interaction portion of the show. Today, Jolly, you were the person who put up the question, and also this was requested by a listener, so I'm going to throw over to you.
Yahoo! Yes, I did. So, the multiplayer question for this week is, what do you listen to while playing games? Do you link specific songs, albums, artists, podcasts to particular games? And this question was submitted by Alex Gagne, which I sent him a message about his name and to ask him how to pronounce it. Mm-hmm. And his response was, I'm of UK descent, cruelly stuck with a French last name. And he proceeded to tell me that his wife also has the same issue and says that it's a Canadian problem. So I just had to tell that anecdote. I'm going to go ahead and turn
hashtag
around and
Canada problems.
Right. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and turn around and read his reply first. He is the one for whom the image for this post was made. He says, I like to play Time Splitter 2 or Time Splitters 2 over Surfin' Bird by the Trashmen. Play Led Zeppelin over Warhawk on PS3, which is where the image came from. Around the PS2 launch, I remember playing a lot of Smuggler's Run while listening to Ram Jam's Black Betty on repeat. More recently, I played War Thunder on PS4, listening to period-appropriate music, big band music from the 30s and 40s, and a lot of Sinatra. I can't recommend that enough, especially since that game is free to play.
Which game is that again?
War Thunder on PS4.
I have no idea what that is.
My coworker is really into that game.
Hmm. Well, there you go. Listen to big band music and play it.
Yeah, dummy.
Yeah, it's apparently like a hyper-realistic... World War II flight simulator. Like, apparently, yeah, if you go too fast, you can shear the wings off your airplane.
Yeah, that seems to be his MO, because he mentioned at least a couple of flight simmies. So,
I've got to say, I feel like we discussed or commented last time on like songs for your helicarrier or whatever, and Metal Gear, whatever.
Yeah.
I feel like Black Betty would be a great one.
I can't think about Black Betty without thinking of Spider-Man City Raid. That terrible Flash game.
See, for me, it's what was that weird Kung Pao?
Oh, man.
Huh.
That's something I have not thought about in a long time. Thank you.
That movie?
Yeah.
You are welcome.
I will pick up here with Chase, who says GTA 3 on the Xbox had a great feature where you could have music that you ripped onto the console as a radio station. My most vivid memories of the game have me zipping around Liberty City, figuring out what music I liked, which at the time were the smooth stylings of Fiddler on the Roof.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
I support this.
I forget. Did GTA 3 have a day-night cycle?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So it is appropriate that he was listening to Sunrise Sunset. Somebody out there was really happy about that.
Despite the long pause here.
you can play matchmaker while picking up a prostitute, maybe. I don't know.
Oh my.
Yeah, I feel like bank heists with If I Were a Rich Man.
there are a lot of good songs from that.
Yeah, basically what we're saying is surprisingly enough, that is completely the most appropriate soundtrack for that game.
It's what the designers intended, but they couldn't get the rights. Yeah. So let's see here. I'm going to pick up... No, I already did that. So Ben, what's Franz say?
You have Franz to say it with the imagined attitude of the image that follows it.
Franz says... he listens to the game soundtrack. It's there for a reason.
And then just make a noise. I believe somebody under the levels account responded with an image of Grumpy Cat making a disapproving face.
I believe it was Dennis.
none of us are in the clear here.
I really like that we're so incredibly disorganized as a podcast that we all innately have plausible deniability.
I'm looking. Oh, here's the thing, though. I know who posted it because, as an admin, I can see below the picture who posted it. So I'm going to just continue not saying who it was.
That's fine. Leave it a mystery.
It could have been any of us.
David, what's Alan say?
Alan says, I was a massive indie pop fan when I played the first Resident Evil. The game terrified me so much that I spent the entire time playing with the sound down, listening to Supergrass and the Lightning Seeds.
Supergrass and Resident Evil, that's pretty good.
I really want to see, like, I feel like almost all of these, like, I want someone to make, like, a mashup music video just to kind of get the feeling of what this makes the game into.
That'd be exceedingly easy to do with a YouTube doubler, actually.
Yeah.
That's the thing?
Yeah. No, it's pretty good. You put in two YouTube URLs and what time you want them to start at, and if you want them to loop, and it plays both videos, but more importantly, the audio from both videos at the same time. So you could take a non-commentary Let's Play of a game with a Supergrass song and just mash them up like that. That is practical tips of how people
for the listener.
Yes, of how right. people can do this for themselves, because I doubt that I have time to do it. Let's see here. David, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, the first time I play a game, I leave all the music off so as to enjoy the way the game was intended to be played. To do it any other way is like bringing an MP3 player to the cinema. Subsequent plays, I do podcasts about science or about the game, such as a certain bonfire side, for example. And then he goes on to say, as for associating games with music, in 1995, I got Sensible World of Soccer for Christmas. I have put thousands of hours into it. Every time I hear a song by Radiohead, my band of choice in 1995, and now, it makes me think of the game, and I play it again. Ah, now I'm thinking of it again. Gotta play.
We call that Chinatown syndrome.
As a side note, I feel like Sensible World of Soccer, I feel like, is
the most polite
whoever made that
game.
Is presumably what?
The most polite game of soccer?
See, I'm just imagining like some group that is the mortal enemies of the team that made Ridiculous Fishing.
It's like, whoa, let's pump the brakes here. We don't need to get too crazy. Yeah. So we didn't really dive into it too much with Franz's response, but that is echoed here as well. Listening to, I don't know, like, I don't know that I'm missing out on too much by having a podcast on in the background, but I can totally see why somebody would want to immerse themselves in that.
See, even for like a fairly story narrative based game?
Well, then I ride the pause button like crazy. So, And also I won't do it for a horror game because sound is very important to that.
Yeah, I was about to say certain genres of game really require having, you know, awareness of the audio in the game in order for them to have the full effect. So I can see both sides of the coin, depending upon what type of game you're playing.
During any given WAF episode, we will say whether or not it is a podcast game.
Wait, what does that mean?
Okay.
All podcast game, Cole. Yeah.
is the line so blurred, Cole? No, it's just if a game is conducive to having the audio track of your brain kind of looking elsewhere.
Yeah.
Jala, what does Steven say?
Steven says, much like Cole mentions from time to time, the silence is deafening. So even when I'm gaming, it's podcast time all the time. I don't know that he had that much emphasis, but I did. Recently, I've been listening through Retronauts backlog, but every 6 months or so, I listen through the entirety of Bonfireside Chat, which then in turn makes me play Dark Souls, which makes me want to listen to more Souls-related podcasts. I may have a problem.
It's Chinatown syndrome. You have a feedback loop going on.
Wait, what is Chinatown syndrome?
No, I'm making a dumb reference to a thing that I...
To cool psychosis of Chinatown.
Yes, I dreamed up Chinatown. I'm a genius. No, good.
No, nothing. Go on.
It's the joke that I make whenever somebody quotes or brings up one of those movies that I talk about all the time. I will say, oh, well, now I have to go watch this again. Mm-hmm. Alluding to the fact that I have a handful of movies that I will just keep on in the background at all times.
Therefore, it is a Cole psychosis thing.
Yes. let's see here. I'll pick up with Eric, who writes in saying, I love listening to Nujabes music. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. As well as other artists he's worked with while playing Dark Souls, like stuff from the soundtrack to Samurai Champloo. I like listening to this track while playing through the Duke's Archives, for example. And he links one, and if I feel like it, I will put in an excerpt of it here. He continues, I think the difficult gameplay of Dark Souls lends itself to the calming music as a nice balance. Yeah.
Well, it might keep you from rage quitting or something.
There is something about Dark Souls that, like, the world is so eerie and isolated that calming ambient sound and kind of like more chill music does work with it strangely. Hmm. Yeah.
Does Dark Souls have like a score or anything?
Only during boss fights, and very rarely for like other small events. I mean, like exceedingly rarely.
Sure.
Usually, although, in a run up to or a walk away from a boss fight.
Although Bloodborne did a lot more music, right?
Not in particular, no.
Okay, I could swear I remembered that. Okay.
Yeah. Like you have music in your home base, and that's about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, what does James say?
All right. James says Duke Nukem 3D San Francisco fault level will be forever associated with the Canellis 7475? I don't know what that is. It always playing a mixtape I had. Every time I hear it now, I think of descending down into the earth and RPGing aliens.
Hmm. This is the a song called 7475 by the Connells.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which I'm not aware of what kind of band that is. Yeah, they're more of a like an REM type thing, it looks like.
I completely forgot that you went to San Francisco and Duke Nukem 3D.
It's been forever since I played Duke Nukem 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah, I can see that. I'm trying to think back. I don't know that I have any like kind of like youth associated memories like that, because I was like way too young, and I was listening to game soundtrack music anyway.
Sure.
So it really mixed in. Oh man, David, you have a really good one coming up. So why don't you? What's Gordon say?
Sure. Gordon says hardcore history, which is why Katamari is forever associated with World War One German flametroopers for me now.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Which I feel like I would really want to play that version of the game.
Yeah. Or you're just rolling up the saw. And catching all of the artillery shells from the sky.
Yeah. I feel like it could be sort of like, what was that game? Like Rulers of the Realm, you know, where, mm-hmm. where you're, you know, doing combat via pinball. This could be like you defeating the Nazis, or I guess these aren't
wrong,
the Nazis. World War One, whatever. Defeating the German army via Katamaris.
Well, there was that. It's weird that this is brought up as a goof. There's a GameCube game called Odama, which it is a strategy game about I believe either ancient Japanese or Chinese warfare. Let's see here. Looks like Japanese rather. But you control it with the bongo controllers from Donkey Konga, and it plays out as a pinball game, and you are literally bowling over enemy troops with a gigantic ball on the field.
Apparently, I am very uninformed about ancient Japanese warfare.
Well, you see, they were locked off from the West for so long. this has that studio has ties to Seaman, which is pretty cool.
That game comes up on this podcast a lot.
It's so good. It's not just because it's the summer of come either. Like, Seaman is great.
Yeah. And I mean, all like one person that played it, you know, is on this podcast.
Oh, Leonard Nimoy's soothing tones. And also, no, the guy who voiced Seaman also ended up voicing Zack in Deadly Premonition.
Hmm.
Yeah. So just neat little ties of weird games. Between the two of them. No, hardcore history is really good. I forget what I was listening to around the time that or what I was playing. Yeah, nope, nothing. I did a whole big archive binge of that earlier this year, but womp womp. Let's see here. Jalla, what does Sam say?
Sam says, I have very strong memories of playing Front Mission 4 in a boiling hot attic while blasting Daft Punk bootlegs until my PS2 burned out. Also, thanks to listening to podcasts while playing games, I will always associate the Duke's Dear Freya in Dark Souls 2 with the movie Baps.
You were listening to the Flop House. Yeah, that's a good episode, too. I like it when they cover older stuff on that show. Listen to the Flop House if you're not already. It's very good. Let's see here. I'm going to pick up with Chris, who says, I really only have something outside of the gameplay if it's something that I've played a million times, like The Binding of Isaac or Super Mario Brothers, or if it's something slower, like a strategy game. In those cases, I use the time to catch up on podcasts or throw a film on the TV. That I've seen a million times for added background noise. Otherwise, I just enjoy the game soundtrack if it's heavily story-based or the spooky ambience of a horror game.
Yay! It's spooky.
Did you double down on that spooky since it's October now, Cole?
Well, I doubled down. Well, that's how Chris wrote it. Yep. But also because it's October, it is the spookiest month.
We need to prep for the supercut.
I forget. The spooker cut?
Spooker cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be a platinum this year guys.
About teledens.
Oh, yeah. Telepathic skeletons. Or no, telekinetic skeletons. There's a big telekinetic difference.
Yeah, that's how they, yeah. Okay, we need to just cut this off right here.
It's to avoid throwing their bones and reassembling themselves.
I'm just picturing IKEA directions for assembling a skeleton, which you would listen to, or you would do while you listen to the knee bones connected to the leg bone or whatever.
Oh, Lord. Okay, moving on.
Okay, let's see here. Ben, what does Evan say?
Evan says, I mostly listen to podcasts/audiobooks, depending upon how demanding a game is on the language center of my brain. And whenever I replay a game, I get extremely detailed flashes of whatever I was listening to. Unfortunately, when I was a teen, I'd listen to awful music when I played games. So now every time I play Kirby's Pinball on the Virtual Console, Chumbawamba was a tub thumper gets stuck in my head.
Oh, my ball falls down, but I shoot it again. Yep, that is a horrible song. Nope. Yeah. I struggled for that terrible thing I just said, so mm-hmm. I'm not going to pull anything else out. Like, do people know what we're saying? Well, when I talk about like, oh, does this take up the audio track of the brain or what Evan says with the the language center? Like, you know, I can't write or do anything if there's music with lyrics happening because I'm focusing on the lyrics.
I can say the same thing when it comes to art stuff, because although art is often without words, unless, of course, I'm working on my comic, at the same time, if I'm focusing too much on it, I have to use too much of the, you know, more rational, organized side of the brain when I'm doing compositions and things. But if I'm doing just straight up painting, that's more abstracted in that, you know, I can listen to stuff with words and be fine. So. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I had a friend who once he theorized that you know, there's a certain part of your brain's, you know, processing power, whatever, that's necessary to mentally construct the person speaking. Mm-hmm. That's why, for example, that like talking on the cell phone while driving is real distracting, but actually having someone next to you talking to you isn't.
Hmm.
So I feel like it's the same thing with like I can game and like have, you know, like, you know, have like someone watching me or like, you know, doing couch co-op or something like that, mm-hmm. and, you know, do conversation, but I can't have like just, yeah, speaking.
Yeah.
Huh. Not a lot of games.
I've played games with you before, David. I can tell you talk about stuff.
I'd be very, I need to be 100% focused on talking. Otherwise, I will pause for about 7 seconds in the middle of a sentence as I complete what I'm doing. I cannot multitask at all. David, what does Glenn say?
Is this back to hardcore history? Yes. Or did I jump ahead?
Yep.
Yeah.
Alright, sorry about that. Glenn says, hardcore history lately, due to most games I play being an all-you-can-grind buffet.
That is a horrible image.
So Gears of War.
Ben wins. That's a pretty good one. Huh.
Yeah, I feel like I can kind of see that for thing, you know, things like... like a Destiny or World of Warcraft or stuff like that. That kind of makes sense.
Ooh, here's my pro tip. Listen to the hardcore history titled Thor's Angels about like ancient Germanic and Viking barbarian tribes while playing King of Dragon Pass. That is fun. I did that today. and then I fell asleep. But that was because I was not paying particular attention to King of Dragon Pass because we already recorded that episode of WoW.
Is that is that a new episode of Hardcore History, or is that an old one?
No, that one, it's hard to tell what's new and old. It was like
if it's World War One, it's recent. If it's not, it's at least a year or two old.
Well, the beginning of World War One was at least 2 years ago.
Yeah,
at least in terms of the show's timeline. No, but it was like around the time or slightly before he did the Mongols, the Wrath of the Khans.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like. Is that sort of like what was the study that said Flight of the Valkyries is the worst music to listen to while driving?
makes you the most aggressive.
Yeah, just makes you like a horrible driver.
I was watching this amazing video. This is Cole summarizes a video he saw of a guy who was trolling like a parade of white supremacists by marching alongside them with a sousaphone, playing an off key version of Ride of the Valkyries along with a all of them just angrily ignoring him. But yes, I would not recommend listening to that or the 1812 overture.
Just in general, those are don't listen to these.
I think Wagner's problematic. No, I mean when you're driving.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let's see here, Jala. What does David say?
David says, while playing MMOs, I'll listen to Pandora Summer Hits of the 90s because it's awesome. A more funnier answer is when I was a kid, 12 or so, I used to play Diablo 1 with a 3-song mix of Thong Song, Blue by Eiffel 65, and Mambo Number 5. I was a weird kid.
Wow.
Was weird, David. Was weird. I played games with you too, David. All the Davids.
I like that you're keeping score and developing a file.
Totally am.
Oh. Yeah, that's that is the most 90s thing I've ever read.
Mm-hmm.
You're so 90s, David. Oh, my.
To be fair, I feel like Diablo is maybe one of the most 90s games you could play.
Yeah. It's kind of riding the tail end of that Doom heat. And I will round us out with our final response for tonight due to time. Everybody, thank you so much for responding along. But we've got... let's see here. Joshua, who writes in saying, I tend to play most games to their native soundtracks. I like to be immersed in the experience, and I feel that listening to other media breaks that for me. I have listened to a podcast here or there while playing something like XCOM, but that is a rare occurrence for me. Upside is that while playing Lunar Silver Star Story on my PS3, the character voices were so irritating to my wife that I now own pretty decent headsets for all my systems. Game, set, match.
There you go.
The voices in that are pretty bad.
See, I feel like a game like XCOM, one of my friends a while back did a pen and paper game that was you know like a military theme. So we did a lot like the came up with a soundtrack that was you know a lot of the really cool like 80s and 90s you know kind of action movie and music, and then also some of the songs that were kind of different perspectives on like the Vietnam War and you know things like that, and got a really cool soundtrack. And I feel like you could do a similar thing for games like XCOMs, and you could come together and get like a cool soundtrack to go along with that of your own.
Yeah, I feel like a game like XCOM would actually benefit from that kind of like from having something in the background or a specially designed music track like that, because at least for me, if I'm making a bunch of tough decisions, having something on in the background keeps my mind from devouring itself.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
I just played Danger Zone on loop while I play XCOM.
I just play the Sonic Drowning music on a loop. No, that's just my alarm tone when I wake up.
Jesus.
No, it's not.
It's no need for coffee. Yeah.
So let's go through ours. Does anybody have one they want to volunteer first?
I would say for associations that weren't intended but are there, Incubus and Star Wars Jedi Outcast, I think I've cited before as being something that's always there. But then outside of that, I'm also do podcasts on games like Civ or XCOM or stuff like that. If it's a regular game that has a narrative, I'll just listen to the game music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, David?
As I've kind of relayed in the past, I unfortunately haven't figured out how to listen to music or like how to have favorite music yet. Yes, I may or may not be an alien slash robot.
David doesn't music.
Yeah, so for me, like I tend to do, at least before I got rid of cable because I was a starving college student, tend to do a lot of news in the background.
Yep.
Fortunately, I've tried that again after college, and I now just get so pissed at the politics that it's no longer relaxing background noise.
Yeah. Yeah, that actually kind of like syncs up with mine a little bit. I make no secret of the fact that I listen to podcasts while I play games, even though I probably would benefit from not. Like, I feel like it doesn't detract. Like, the second it would distract me too much, I pause it. And like having an Apple Watch helps that because I can just be like, yo, I'm not going to say the keyword in case I trigger anybody else's, but I'm like, blah, 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 pause. And then it pauses. And then when it's ready to go back on, I say, blah, blah, blah. Go on. I don't have to take my hands off the controller. I have this particular association to that news tip with playing Fallout 3. And remember, this was like late 2008, like the housing crisis was in full swing. Mm-hmm. And playing that while listening to Planet Money, which I think it's still going on. I haven't listened to it for a very long time, but it was like an offshoot of This American Life that was kind of created as a 3 times weekly show, basically about how all of us were fucked because money isn't an actual thing anymore. I'm not advocating for the gold standard there, but I mean, just like they were talking about like the different ways that the world came crumbling down upon down around us. And like playing Fallout while listening to that, well, obviously it's hyperbole. You know, we're not going to be scrounging for instant potato flakes just because of bad loan practices or whatever, but it definitely the two anxieties played each other up a lot. And that was right around the time I started listening to podcasts too. So Fallout, a very good podcast game, and that was a strange coincidence between the two of them.
Instant potato flakes are really, really bad dandruff because there is no more shampoo. Oh, no. Yeah.
So am I the only one that feels like not to do like the video game audio equivalent of like I'm a better driver when I'm drunk, but that feels like to a certain degree, I'm sometimes better, particularly at like competitive shooters. When I'm like listening to something because I'm just distracted enough not to overthink what I'm doing in the game.
I mean, it's like what I said before, your brain stops trying to devour itself.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely a much more disturbing way of stating what I said.
No, I don't think you're alone.
Sure.
I mean, like in a more like traditional example, like think about people who would listen to pump up music. You know, before, yeah, during, yeah, or after they play. Like, it's sure. A thing. Custom soundtracks are a thing. Jala, how about you?
Well, I had to think about this for a while because I actually don't tend to listen to stuff other than the game soundtrack. I do a couple of other things that are weird, but I did have one response. When I was running through and doing some Guild Wars 1 grindy type stuff, trying to get my Hall of Monuments beefed up for Guild Wars 2 release, I was listening to Cameron Foster's podcast, A Short History of Japan, and he is an Aussie professor who has a really awesome sense of humor, and that is a funny podcast, but it's also very informative, and it's rather awesome to listen to when you're just doing repetitive MMO stuff. So that's the only thing I could think of that I actually was listening to while playing a game. However, I do two different things that are kind of related. I listen to game music pretty often when I'm not playing games, like when I'm driving or when I'm working out, things like that, particularly stuff like boss battle music, etc. But also, I sometimes in the past have created words for instrumental game music that I hear a lot of, like battle themes and things, and then sing a little tune that I made up while I'm playing it.
this is and a boss, actually, this is a boss, this is a boss, yeah. It's a boss.
I actually did something kind of like that when I was playing through some, you know, end of game bosses in like my teen, like early teen years. I would do that, and I had just very simple little chants that I would sing to the tune. So yeah, something like that.
Hmm.
So I have a weird reply. That's all.
Well, thank you, Alex, for passing this along. I mean, I think all of us are pretty predisposed to think about listening to stuff while we play, because they're very much intertwined. And thank you, everybody, for responding. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. If you want to get in on this action, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, and look for those going up on Tuesday afternoons.
The grind.
Now it's time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, since you have been away the longest, I will throw it to you first.
I haven't been away that long. I mean, like, you've had like a Jala streak lately, pretty much, except for like, you know, that last little hiccup. Anyway, yes, I'll go ahead and say the thing. All right, so first off, I have to do my usual co-op mentions. For Guild Wars 2, Chase, Sam, Noah, Conrad, and I beat 1.5 of the 3 paths in the Ascalonian Catacombs explorable mode dungeon, the Human Path of the Howling King, and half of the Char Path of the Ghost Eater. Chase had to go while we were in the middle of the Ghost Eater path, so we ended up unable to progress and had to call it a night from there. Otherwise, I also played Left 4 Dead 2 with Graham Markison, listener, who is also in the Duck Fed Guild on Guild Wars.
I think you mean Grim Darkison.
Yeah, that's his current spooky name. He had just gotten to the appropriate level to do the explorable dungeon, but we had a full party and he couldn't join when Chase popped out. So instead, we ended up playing a different game. So he opted for Left 4 Dead 2 because he totally missed the Left 4 Dead train. Mm-hmm. So we played with Jonathan Kufus, which is another listener, and Jewel Lockhart, and got him through the first map. And so that was a thing. There's nothing really exciting to say about that other than that, you know, we played the thing. As for what I've been playing independently, I have played more of Fist of Jesus. Not that that's very surprising to anybody. I got my t-shirt in along with some stickers, which I love, and I intend to put all over my sketchbook, because this is something that listeners may not know. I put stickers all over every sketchbook I ever have. I have some stickers from Watch Out for Fireballs and Dead Idea Valhalla and random stuff all over the place. So I like stickers. I put them on things. Also, I have unlocked the rest of the special weapons for Judas, the last being Key, which shoots a lightning bolt and temporarily protects you from harm. I have not played any more on Steam. It's been mostly on my iPad, so I haven't fully unlocked Jesus's moves, because Jesus is only available on Steam. You cannot find him on the iPad. There is no Jesus on iPad.
Let that be a lesson to you.
Also, I randomly found out that there is a sort of sequel film in production by the same people who made this game and the live-action short movie, and it's supposed to be called Once Upon a Time in Jerusalem. I'm totally going to be watching for that. So that's about all I have to say about Fist of Jesus, but yes, it's still there, and it will continue to be there until I beat it.
They missed an opportunity to not do a Fistful of Eucharist.
That would be neat, but I don't know. That might be a future installment. You never know. They might be doing a bunch of these. So next
for a few pieces thing, of silver more.
For a few denarii more, you mean?
Okay.
There you go. So the next thing, I've been playing, not so surprisingly, Leviathan, Last Day of the Decade. I played through again, this time on Steam, to see if I can successfully be evil throughout everything that's out so far, as in all the way through episode 4. And yes, the answer is yes, you can be evil the entire way through. It doesn't seem to change the meta story at all, but it does interact, you know, like it does change your interactions in certain parts anyway, and how certain things play out, but you still get to the same end goal. I'm still managing, and this is like my fourth or fifth playthrough now, to find new stuff that I haven't seen before. I keep on finding more stuff. So I totally recommend anybody who's playing this game that they pick up the cell phone or the, you know, the phone that the main character has and call everybody consistently. So far, most of the information that you get more recently, that I've found at least, has come from your older sister, Ginny, but every once in a while, other people pick up the phone and offer additional story beats and sometimes drop a complete bomb on your game. And you're like, whoa, that is something completely crazy. And it's absolutely optional. I did not even need to know that. That's something that I really appreciate about this game is that it's so story rich that there's just a bunch of stuff that is not, you know, necessary for the critical path that you can just stumble across by picking a different option. I found out, for example, more about the Academy for Sorcery that your sister went to and your master became the regent of. I also found out how to open the magical box that I found in the statue the first time I played. And I also discovered a whole segment related to books made out of human skin and some, you know, crazy recruiters for both like an evil and a good sect of, you know, different religions. So, you know, like, I'm still finding new things. So I definitely recommend anybody who hasn't already taken a look at it or any of the listeners who got a free copy and have not picked it up yet, go through and just try it a little bit because there's a bunch of stuff in this game. And it just, I don't find myself skipping through as much of the text in this game as I do in other visual novels when I've had to go through and, you know, play through to see more content. I actually tend to reread it because there's just so many different things going on that I kind of want to keep it straight in my head. So that's something that's interesting for me because that's a new occurrence in my book. So
nice.
And I have one more thing.
Okay.
This is a new one. Valdis Story. Valdis Story is a Metroidvania sword and sorcery genre type of game. You explore the ruins of a holy city that was lost years ago and is now overrun with angels, demons, and a new enemy known as Ferals. Basically, in the story, a little over 40 years ago, the goddess Valdis was killed by one of her twin daughters, and this sparked a goddess, you know, a goddess mode battle, family feud, fueled by human souls. Apparently, although it seems pretty bread and butter, in scrolling through reviews, several people mentioned the lore being deep and interesting to read. And you also apparently get bonus stats for finding the books of the old gods that have the lore in them, but I haven't come across any of those just yet. You start by playing Wyatt, who is a wandering swordsman. There's also three other characters available right now, but I haven't unlocked any of them. One is an orphaned monk that became... that was primed to become an angel warrior and decided to run off instead. Another one is kind of like a Vincent Valentine type of dude with a jacked up blade arm because the angels performed experiments and imprisoned demon souls in his arm or something. And he also has a gun. And then there was another character who is a demon whose family was tight with the demon army until her grandpa allegedly ran from a battle. And much like with Wyatt's dad, the Dark Goddess tossed out an execution order. And so Gilda was with him up until the moment that he died. And his last words to her were for her to find Wyatt's Papa Bear because he knows the truth of something. So now she's looking for him, too. Anyway, so that's pretty much, you know, like the premise. The art is kind of like an American chibi style. That is, these are Western artists who are running their own spin on Japanese chibis. And it's primarily made by a couple, Kyron Ramsey and Carolina Moya of Endless Fluff Games. The total team size is four people. There's also a musician and a sound effects guy. So far, the combat is fluid and it moves really quickly. Spells are used by pressing buttons and indicating directions, so it's not complicated. It's not like when you're in Symphony of the Night and you have to do like a combo. Each character has dashes and combos, you know, melee combos, wall jumps, and so on. There's a basic... Huh?
Do the characters play substantially differently from each other? Do you have a sense of that?
I don't know because I've only played with the one. Right. I haven't unlocked the others yet. There's a basic RPG skill tree, attack, defense, magic, and each character has different stuff, like different abilities they can unlock in said tree, but it is still the same base tree. Downsides that I've seen so far is that there is not a quest log or an objectives menu, and there isn't a world map. And also, I have not seen that you can duck. But they have been doing consistent updating to the game from what I can see in the community. So hopefully they'll patch these things in a future update, because they have been adding to the game over time. So
how would you compare this game to something like Rogue Legacy? Because like looking at the gameplay footage on the Steam page, it actually looks like the characters are roughly a similar scale. You're encountering kind of similar like variances of enemies and stuff like that. Like have you played that? Can you draw a comparison?
I can't, because I have it in my list of games on my backlog, and it's been in my backlog for a bit, but I haven't actually started playing Rogue Legacy yet.
Okay. So. Yeah. Huh. So I'm not a fan of like the concept art that they have for this, but in the game, it looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Like the sprite art, like I am super down with really highly detailed 2D stuff. Like I really wish that we didn't just abandon that in the mid 90s mm-hmm. because everything had to be 3D. So huh.
It sort of reminds me of, like, Legend of Secret Mana.
Well, what? You mean Secret of Mana?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, Secret of Mana.
There was also a Legend of Mana, I believe, as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I. both of those. It reminds me of both of them.
Yeah. Neat. So do you have a sense of, like, how far you are into it, or...?
I know I'm right at the beginning part still. I mean, you unlock the other characters as you go through the game, so if I haven't unlocked anybody and I haven't come across a lore book yet, I'm just dipping my toe in right now. Yeah. I mean, I've poked around in a few places. I've gone to a human village, and another interesting thing is that all of the humans are losing their hair color, and they all have white hair because they apparently haven't been in the sun in so long because they have to hide. So, like, they're all bleaching out. Because they're basically cave dwellers, if you will. So,
Yeah, that's a nice little bit of world building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like it, I'm interested to see more of the game, and it does play smoothly, and it's pretty fun and I would say pretty seamless. There are things that yes, they could improve on it, but as I said, they are patching the game kind of consistently, and they are interested in feedback. So whatever it is that people have said, like there are reviews that I've seen that talk about things that had been patched after the review, and so the bad review or you know the critical review is on there, but then they fixed it and that review is still sitting there, so it still counts against them, but you know they did something about it. So
yeah, I get kind of upset when people get angry about companies fixing their shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a feature, like that's yes, it would have been cool if they had done it right, but they listened and they fixed it and now a better thing exists.
Well, right. And then too, like this is a very small team, you know, they don't have a whole, you know, like a whole repertoire of people, you know, who have made a bunch of different games on the team who are advising them about you should think you should add this thing, like mm-hmm. they're not going to know about it until it's exposed to a community of people.
Yeah.
Which will then tear it apart and then tell them what they need to do.
Yeah.
You know, so the fact that they are going back after they've gotten the money for it and doing stuff to it to improve it is mm-hmm. pretty cool.
Yeah.
So
it seems like the Ur example of that, like the time when that can work out best is like Legend of Grimrock, that team, somebody reached out, a person who had some accessibility concerns, where they wouldn't be able to play the game unless they had the ability to navigate with the arrow keys. And so they like just immediately patched that in so that guy could play it. Like, I mean, more of that stuff, please.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So yeah, like I've gotten a good impression about the team itself, although, you know, I'm kind of with you on like, I'm not the biggest fan of the concept art, but the actual in-game art is really mm-hmm. cute, and I really like it. It's very pretty, but it's also very functional, and you know, it's a smooth running game, so I'm definitely gonna be playing more of it in the future. Nice. So
cool. I'm gonna go to mine, I think, unless you have something else that you wanted to hit.
Nope, that's it.
Yeah. So David, you're probably gonna want to cover your ears, because I'm gonna talk about the beginner's guide.
Oh, that looks interesting.
Oh, goody. I actually had posted an article about that because I was like, ooh, this has piqued my interest.
It really should. So, Beginner's Guide. This is the new game that we talked about last week by one of the creators of the Stanley Parable. And it is very similar in that you are walking around and exploring kind of some of these spaces. But the concept is that it is a game that is made by somebody who is collecting the incomplete works of an indie developer that they really like, and they want to kind of expose his work to more people. And so it's presented with commentary by the creator of this game, voicing it himself. As he is kind of like walking through saying like, here is this half finished level that, you know, so-and-so, I forget the name of the, Coda is the name of the name of the fictional developer here. Like, you know, like it's just a space you can walk around. There's not much to do, but I'd like you to see, because you can really get a sense. And like, as you go around, this narrator is kind of like deconstructing it, and you're going through like chapter by chapter. Every chapter is a new game with kind of this, like different kind of thesis to it that the narrator over explains.
Just like the Stanley Parable.
Well, I mean, in a more direct kind of fashion, as opposed to like aiming right for the jugular, like Stanley Parable can tend to do. In this game, it's, you know, with that ridiculous premise, you would not think that I would say this thing cuts straight to the bone, but it really does. Like, my tweet about this was that it is devastating. And it really is. Like the places that it goes, and you know, it's this whole genre of game is unfortunate because you can't really talk about it without spoiling things, but the places that it goes as regards kind of the relationship between these two people and the way that is expressed through the game, and kind of like some of the metatextual stuff around like what is real authorship, like who, you know, isolation is a big part of this. Isolation and validation are what like Griffin McElroy from Polygon kind of like hit on really hard in his little write-up about it. It hits that, you know, incredibly hard, and like just kind of like, how disconnected is it possible to be now and stuff? Like, it hits all these themes and it does it super quick. It does not stay its welcome. It's like a 100-minute game. And that's if you like explore everything and read all the messages and stuff. But like, it gets like a wholehearted recommendation.
It, the theme of it sounds very like Charlie Kaufman-esque, but in the video game setting, you know?
Yeah, that's not a bad comparison. I mean, like, so one person to hear that and say, oh, that's, you know, just wankery. It's a bunch of stuff about making video games that'll be real appealing to somebody who makes video games. Or, you know, it's like Charlie Kaufman tends to make movies about people who like making movies, right? But on the other hand, he does deal with it with the same level of, I think, tact, insofar as he knows when not to be tactful.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Cool.
So, like, I don't know what more I can say about it other than to say, like, I dude missed it. Like, I don't want to oversell it. I don't want people, you know, I don't want to say, like, oh, this thing's going to change the way you, you know, think about how isolated you are and blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't want that to be what somebody carries into it, except to say that, like, it is emotionally affecting in a way that the Stanley Parable was for me. And I think probably more broadly applicable to more people than the Stanley Parable was, while being like more focused just by nature of its structure. Like, it is not this thing that is meant to be broken. It is definitely, you know, a hallway that you walk down, and stuff happens. Go ahead.
I think that'd be interesting, because actually I think a lot of my hatred of the Stanley Parable is just I felt it was disrespectful of my time. So it sounds like this might be something that maybe would be a little bit more of my speed. So that seems kind of cool.
Disrespectful of your time insofar as like you would walk down, like, can you
like
elaborate on that?
Like an Ubisoft game?
Just in terms of, you know, just a lot of the non-linearity of it and stuff like that just kind of came across as just being kind of bullshit to me.
Mm.
You know, just kind of I don't know, pseudo-artistic masturbation to waste my time.
I don't know. See, like, I looked at it, and you can, they're like, you know, now we're talking about the Stanley Parable, but like, they
current.
but I mean, so there's an important distinction, because these two games are very different in that regard. Like, this is that straight hallway, whereas like Stanley Parable, that had the straight hallway too. Like, you could just follow the directions of the narrator, and, you know, that could be your first playthrough, is you just do whatever he says. But the fact that it puts these attractive nuisances in your way, and you can see how little decisions that you make along the way can branch you off into something that completely breaks the narrative and causes the world to fold back over on itself. And like, that to me, like, it felt really respectful of my time, because I like the idea of a critical path with those nuisances along the way that like draw you off of it and reward you with more game on the other side of it. And so knowing that I could disobey the author, which is the key point of that whole thing, made me extremely excited to look for more opportunities to do that. So that didn't bother me the way that it bothered you.
I guess it was more, though, that when I tried to do that, it's like, well, actually, playing the game from, like, a dead new save and playing the game from when you've, you know, played the game before is different. So when you try to go after these interesting things, we're actually just going to fuck with you.
Yeah, I don't remember any of the paths that were dependent on you completing a path beforehand.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I don't know.
Yeah, but anyways, or just the self-destruct sequence really annoyed me.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's neither nor there. My point being, this sounds like maybe it would be maybe this game could be some of the similar kind of artistic beats, and maybe a format that might be a little bit more palatable to certain people. So
yeah, it could be read as less ambitious than the Stanley Parable, which I could totally understand that. However, they are different things, and like this does benefit from the focus, at least for the story that it's trying to tell. Like,
yeah, see,
I wanted to be able to focus on the relationships in play as opposed to like looking at the environment.
Yeah, I feel like that's assuming that ambition is a virtue, as opposed to, you know, making something good being a virtue.
Mm. I mean, little column A, little column B. Like, they're it's not a tautology. Like, they can both be good in their own right.
True, true.
Yeah.
Anyways, no, that was meant to be a positive statement, and it kind of ended up being a negative one. So I was meant to be a positive, optimistic statement.
Yeah. I mean, watch for it. It's like $10. I think it's totally worth the price of entry.
Reasonably priced.
Yeah, it's just it is one of those things, like it is part of that kind of pantheon of games for me that is like, oh, this changes the way I think about something, which cool. Which is super cool. Boy, it's just a punch to the gut. I don't have much else. I kind of want to save my Tearaway chat for when Dennis is on, because I want him to goad me into continuing. He lent that to me in exchange for Danganronpa before he went on vacation, and I've been playing it off and on just as I've been going to sleep. And aside from the fact that part of the conceit is there's a you who lives in the sun who helps control stuff and alters the world, and that is literally you, the player, and it shows you like the baby's face in Teletubbies in the sun by activating the forward facing camera on your PS Vita from the least flattering angle possible. So like I'm getting a dentist view of my face and my horrible chin, just my awful ghoulish visage. I was like, oh god, just like hide yourself from yourself in the sun.
I feel like you should just play the entire game while wearing a mask.
If that might help, actually. I don't know how much of my negative opinion of this. It's not like a negative opinion. It feels too simplistic. It's simplistic to the point where, like, the first chapter doesn't let you jump. And I was really excited because, like, oh my gosh, a platformer where you can't jump and you have to.
It's like Zelda.
Kind of, but, like, it has you using the features of the of the Vita to navigate, right? Like, so you stand on top of drums and you tap the back of the screen and it launches you upward. And I'm like, this is kind of cool. This is like Captain Toad or whatever. And then at the end of the first chapter, you get the ability to jump, and then you get the ability to do like roll attacks. And I'm like, oh, they're just turning this into a platformer. That's a bummer. And though it's beautiful, and though I love the papercraft aesthetic, and I love the fact that they are intentionally doing this very limited frame rate kind of presentation, and like it's adorable and charming, I just have, I'm not very interested in continuing, and I want to hear Dennis come at me with some kind of justification for why it's worth pursuing, because there could be a turn, and I would hate to drop it before there's a turn, but that's about where I'm at.
Hmm.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I got nothing this week.
Attaboy.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
no Metal Gear?
No. Nope. No. No video games.
Oh. Okay. Cool. Well, let's go to David. How about you?
Sure. I've just been playing a lot more Destiny.
Okay. Have you gotten to the Taken King content?
Yes, I have, and it is so much better. it's kind of funny because I feel like I was kind of like thinking over beforehand what I was, you know, gonna say about some of this stuff. And I feel like I kind of want to preface and say, like, I really liked Destiny, like even vanilla Destiny. I feel like it's a weird game in that, like, the some of the negative reputation it has, I think, is completely unfair. On the other hand, I think all of the criticisms of the game are justified.
Okay.
You know, in terms of, like, you know, a lot of the, I think most of the criticisms of, like, the narrative and the loot system and, yeah. You know, a lot of the, like, things they screwed up were completely, like, on point and were things that need to be fixed. On the other hand, I think it was always a good game. But, so, I'm basically saying that to be, like, when I say that, like, everything is better, I, you know, that's not so much me being, like, it was crappy to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But, It's kind of funny because, like, one of the things I noticed even in, like, the first, like, 5 minutes of the first mission is they've just dramatically upped the amount of dialogue in the game, and that really, really helps.
Okay.
You know, they do a lot more radio chatter with the various members of the Vanguard, which are kind of... There's basically, like, three people that are the leaders of each of the in-game classes and are sort of the military command of the Destiny world. And so, you know, they're kind of, you know, giving you intel and, you know, commentary on what you're doing as you're fighting.
Okay.
So it's both... It's both a lot more entertaining, and, you know, often, you know, the dialogue's pretty funny, pretty entertaining, that sort of thing. And I feel like it also, you know, kind of supports sort of, you know, some of the feelings of kind of being a part of, you know, kind of these military strike forces and that, you know, kind of that sort of flavor.
Does it benefit from having more direct storytelling through this dialogue than kind of the previous iterations of the game does? Because, like, most of the complaints that I heard about the story was that it was far too obscure, both in terms of kind of finding it and digging it up, which is fine in and of its own. I mean, Dark Souls, right? But but also that it didn't warrant or didn't have enough flavor to it to make it feel worth doing that digging.
Sure.
So, like, laying a bear seems to probably mitigate that discrepancy, right?
Sure. Yeah, I would say kind of two things. I would say on the one hand, I think both counts, that's true. Mm-hmm. I would say on the one hand, I think kind of having a more focused and explicit, you know, plot really works for it, because in the previous games, you know, one of the weird things is none of the stuff you're doing, like, you're just kind of how to say this, you're fighting at, you know, you're fighting fights that matter, but they're just sort of the threats that happen to come up at the time.
Okay.
You know, there's not really an effective justification for, like, here is why this one particular story arc is, like, the existential threat that, like, has to be faced.
Nor is there justification for why you can do missions over and over again.
Yeah, I think that's just a game conceit, so that I don't really care about that. But personally, I could see other people that bothering, but personally, I think that's just kind of, it's a game.
Yeah.
But and it still kind of has that problem, in as much as, like, you're fighting quote unquote the darkness, but there's still absolutely no information whatsoever on what the darkness is. But I feel like by having explicitly, like, one enemy with one goal that you have, that you have to stop, it kind of gains traction from being more focused, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on the other hand, I think kind of what you said with the flavor, I think just a lot of the interaction is a lot more entertaining.
Yeah.
There's just some some witty back and forths. There's a lot of great voice acting. Yeah, I mentioned Lance Reddick doing the leader of the Titans. The leader of the Hunters is Nathan Fillion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like that. Obviously Nolan North, can tend to do entertaining characters. So I feel like there's a lot of the voice cast that's really good and, well written. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. So that is something I feel that Bungie does really well, is that battle dialogue kind of stuff, or like in the moment, like, go run, do this next thing. I've never been so much interested in, here is a computer log that will tell you about the reconciliation and the arbiter of discontents and things like that. Like, I feel like that is just a little bit much. So to hear that they're focusing on that is on what I perceive to be their strength does actually make it feel more attractive, keeping in mind that I will never ever play Destiny because there is no place for that in my life.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I think there's also, they also pull in I think a little bit of just I don't know, just kind of the dialogue as banter type of things.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of mentioned, one of the characters I really like is Eris Morn, who's kind of this, very, very much, everything is grimdark and everything's things awful and stuff like that. And so there's a whole bunch of, sequences where, she's kind of the expert on the faction that's attacking you. Mm. So where they'll go, go to get her advice, in what you're doing, and then just come back and just be them trying to explain her instructions to you. So there's one sequence, they're like, well, so she was saying something about disconnecting the necro. Fuck it, just shoot it.
Oh,
so they do a lot of that. In terms of your point, though, I feel like they do. I think they steal some of the Dark Souls thing in terms of they do a lot of, like, we're going to kind of fill in some of the backstory by just, like, repeatedly name dropping some people and just, like, each time giving a short quote that, kind of gives you a little bit of an idea of what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also, it seems like they've kind of tried to paint in some of the themes. So, like, they have kind of a neat thing going now with the idea that your ghost, you know, apparently it spent decades searching the world, you know, to, before he revived you and you became a guardian. Mm-hmm. So there's just kind of some neat themes.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, just as long as they're not calling something a proper noun and then expecting me to care about it because it's a proper noun. And ooh, boy. how about the play? I mean, it's likely that you're not at like rating stuff, but like, is there cool new mission content for you to do like in a moment to moment kind of sense?
Sure. Well, actually one of the things I wanted to talk about is I did do one of the raids.
Okay.
So that's kind of a double-edged sword. On the one hand, I'd say my main complaint with the game is the whole plot line of the Taken King is that in a previous raid, you killed this basically like Lovecraftian god named Crotus.
Okay.
And now his father is coming after you for revenge. The problem with this is that raids require groups of six players, and they're the only part of the game that Bungie refuses to allow matchmaking, which means for a large portion of the players, you in fact did not kill Crotus.
Oh.
Oh.
So it's just... It's just incredibly idiotic and asinine design.
They don't gate it, so like you can buy the second expansion without having played the first expansion, and it's all, I guess they don't check for that.
Well, I mean, the problem is, like, even if you played the first expansion, like, actually killing Crotus is not at all on the main path. That's a explicitly super elite, like, ultra end game content.
It's like a Trivial Path Jimmy content.
yeah. I mean, it's basically like World of Warcraft raiding before Blizzard realized to get their act together and, you know, maybe let, you know, everyone who plays for your game, you know, actually play your game. So I know. It really pisses me off because, you know, it would have been so easy to even just, like, you know, detect if the player hadn't run that raid before and just, you know, have them first do some mission where you just, like, go in and, you know, just, you know, do a ultra scaled down version of the raid, you know, just to, for the story makes sense. But so I
agree that that's a problem with the game is that you can do the raids like completely out of order and not have any sort of context for what's going on.
Right. Right. It's just, why would you do that? I don't know. That really, really frustrated me. There's no reason to make the game, you know, to make it like that. But on the plus side, actually, I used one of the... one of the fan created like matchmaking websites and was able to get into a team, and you know, so far my experience with the Destiny community has been really, really positive. So like this team, you know, it was mostly you know, people who were just, you know, had done it dozens of times and were just like, you know, doing it for, you know, just running it repeatedly for loot. But me and another player, you know, had never done it before. So, you know, they went through and, you know, before each encounter, you explained how to do it. And, you know, one of the encounters, there's basically a way to just kind of cheat your way past it, which is normally what people do because they're there for the loot. But, you know, they decide, you know, to try to do it the right way so that, you know, since we had never seen it before and stuff like that. So that was actually a really, really positive experience once I actually got to it. So
nice.
Cool. So yeah, other than that, yeah, the actual storyline seems really cool. They've really done a lot better with their level. Oh, well, I think the level design's always been good. They've really gone for broke for being, you know, this happens in space and you're fighting basically Lovecraft monsters, so we can make the levels look like whatever the hell we want them to be.
Hmm.
So it's very much like the architectural style is if you mashed up like spaceship with like giant like semi gothic like mansion crypt combined with like everything being covered and just kind of this generic Lovecraftian like ichor and like coral and crap.
That sounds great.
Cool. Yeah, I feel like it's I feel like really you have a Pavlovian response to Lovecraftian.
Yeah.
I was gonna say he just kind of has this tasty kind of like.
Well, well, it's an auditory medium. I have to voice my approval.
Yeah. Well, and they just do a lot of like the raid was a similar same faction, so similar look, and in that like they do a segment where basically you're dropped into complete darkness and you have to dash from lit area to lit area
while listening to lit.
Yes. And like in between there's just like these vast pits into the ground that the enemies crawl out of. And then like later on they do get a lot of use of just having like, I feel like this isn't going to translate to like me explaining it, but they do a lot of use of like having the like generic like blinding light, turn up the bloom effects real high.
Mm-hmm.
In order to create like, a lot of things where like you open up a doorway and like have to walk into this blinding light, and they do a lot of neat visual effects, I guess is what I'm getting at.
No, I mean, like, that is possibly the most, like, attractive description of this game I've heard, honestly. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're just, like, cherry-picking examples that are gonna, like, trip my that sounds spooky, kind of feeling, but no, like, that's, you're doing a good job at describing this in a way that, like, almost nothing else has. Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, like I said, I think something that I think definitely can be said for it is it seems like it's a game that they very much care about making better. And, I can definitely see where like the Taken King is very, very much, here's all the things we learned from what people didn't like about our game that we've now fixed.
Nice. Yeah, and as we've established, that's a good thing.
Yes, yes. The theme for the week, fixing your problems is good.
We're in favor of there being less problems.
We are glad that humanity does not still live in caves, unless you're playing Fallout.
Far Cry.
Yeah.
Well, also probably lots of Fallout.
Yeah, there are a lot more caves in Fallout than there would be in most areas of the world, but caves are fun. I do not care if it's unrealistic. Do you guys want to button it up?
Buttons!
Snap!
The credit. Snaps, zip. Not buttons?
Zip. Oh, yes. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I am super thankful that you guys are tuning in. It's really cool to see all the participation and stuff. Let's see here in terms of things that I would like you guys to know about. If you're listening to this, when it comes out, you still have a couple days to help our friend Gary out. Go to duckfeed.tv/bonfiresidecats to take a look at the t-shirt that I designed. And buying that helps him afford a place to live because he has recently found himself without home due to life circumstances. All the support that's come through on that has been wonderful, and I want more people to know about it. That ends on Sunday here after this comes out. So hurry about that if you are interested. Yeah. That is on Sunday the 11th is when that ends. In addition to that, we're coming up on the Portland Retro Games Expo. If you are in the Pacific Northwest, we would love to have you. Our talk is on Sunday morning. We are covering Castlevania. And I'm looking forward to that. We're also going to have a booth set up. We're going to be playing Castlevania. It's going to be a good time. And also there is a Watch Out for Fireballs / Duckfeed meetup happening at a location with a hilarious name. I believe it's called Your Father's Place, south of the convention center, on Saturday night, starting at 7 o'clock and going till ? Looks like a cool place. We would love to see you. But otherwise, there's all the usual stuff that you can do for us. iTunes, ratings, reviews, Facebooks. Does anybody have anything they want to plug?
If you go to my father's place, they do board gaming there like on Wednesday or Tuesday nights.
Hmm.
So is this going to be like DuckCon Zero?
No, we've done meetups and stuff before. I think DuckCon is going to require more of a venue takeover. It can't be DuckCon unless there are shows. And unless they're like this is a whole bunch of let's say components of what DuckCon could be. But since Buffo the Clown cannot be there, it can't be officially called DuckCon.
I'm not sure I feel about the inclusion of clowns.
Well, it's Buffo the Clown. He loves America.
Can we call it
FalCon? See, I sort of like DuckCon because that's like DefCon.
A little bit, yeah. Like there could be a little nuclear theme to it. Yeah, I dig it. Huh. So
the FalCon, that is actually pretty catchy.
Yeah. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been David Moneysmith at MySmith777 on Twitter.
Not used to the second spot.
I am always Jolichan, except right now on the Slack, I am currently Jolly Chainsaw.
And I am There Was a Coal Here.
And I am Ben Merkel, yet to decide my spooky name, at Merkelizer on Twitter.com.
And stick around to hear us talk about titles.
I have titles to give today.
Give me titles.
I started writing stuff down.
Yeah.
All right. So the first one.
You're
on
way
there,
too experienced or organized.
Maybe both. All right. Anyway. So first things first was Alpha Cole, but then I thought about it. And since you also mentioned Alpha Protocol, Alpha Protocol. So that's what I decided. Not How Eels Work. Canadian Problem. Podcast Game and Trivial Path Jimmy.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's see here. David, Ben.
I do not have a pen or pencil, so I did not write anything down.
Okay.
And I'm just incredibly disorganized and irresponsible.
I have another one here that is a callback, killing all animals and taking their everything.
We could also do Jeep was a prehistoric animal.
Jeep exoskeleton?
Yeah, there you go.
All right, let's see here. The Hunter Remains the Hunted. And also Sprock Zathura. So there's a lot here.
Yeah.
How about this? How about I do something kind of strange? Because I'm having trouble like picking a favorite among these. Unless somebody really wants to make a plea, I can put this to the Slack group. I can actually say like, "Hey, which of these do you like?" And whatever gets the most approval, I will choose.
Toss it to the Slack. Let them go get it.
You should just pick whichever one gets the least amount of approval. Spite, spite, spite.
To be fair, that's usually what we do.
Yeah
pretty much. Everybody else picks everything else except the ones that we decide on
because they don't have the context.
I feel like you could meta our selection pretty easily.
How so?
Which is because I feel like you'd need to look at I feel like a lot of our selection is more based on like a combination of what's funny, but also like what is a funny scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you look at like we often have a couple that are just like kind of weird things we said. But I feel like it's more like which of these probably has an awesome story behind how it got said.
Yeah.
But yeah, are we going with Alpha Call or Alpha Protocol?
I put it in there just in case. I put both in.
Okay.
But we'll see. This isn't going to happen in real time. People who are listening are, you know, are
out of luck.
You know, a little bit, but they're going to, they can see it. They knew it before anybody. Like, they're going to know it before us, kind of. Wait, that's not how time works. Oh, well.